Bienvenidos a otro episodio de Alce Falce Immigrantes. I'm your host, Jordan Prince, here in Studio B at M94.5 Studios with producer Moritz Batscheider. Welcome to another episode. Today we have a talented piano player and a great friend, Vivi Del Rio. Hola, Violeta de Río del Castillo. Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Hola, ¿qué tal? Muy bien, how are you?
I miss you, Vivi. This is my friend, Vivi Violeta del Río del Castillo. Vivi, what's that name stand for in English?
Violeta del Río del Castillo?
Mm-hmm.
It's a violet of the river from the castle.
¡Oh, mamma mia! Oh, man, that's such a nice one.
This is like, yeah, my mom was like, apparently, like, all the doctors when I was born were like, all right, this girl has to be like a flamenco dancer or like something like that, you know, like a singer or something.
she's either blessed or cursed with a name like that.
Exactly, like, she's like a completely normal person that doesn't do anything with her life.
Like, who's that librarian with all the personality? Well, as long as you're comfortable, my friend, it's nice to have you on FaceTime there in New Orleans. You just flew back from a vacation in Morocco, is that right?
Yes, 6 weeks.
Oh, my God. That's awesome. I know. What did you do?
We went to so many places. I was in Madrid, in Barcelona, in Morocco, in Malaga. It was just like a tour in Spain and Morocco.
Oh, that's so nice.
I know.
For anyone who's listening, who's curious about who this special person is for me, if you know my music, we released an album last year called 12 Songs for 12 Friends, and there's a song on there, one of my personal favorites. It's called Eye to Eye. And Vivi not only played piano for that entire record, she came to Germany to play it, but she also sang a lot, and that song is for her. That's your song. And there was a time where you didn't like that very much.
I'm over it.
But I mean, whenever I introduce that song live, I tend to explain that it's one of my favorites because it's about probably one of my strongest friendships in the way that, like, I think what I really admire about you as a friend is that you're very good at not letting things slide. If there's a problem, whether that ends up being for better or worse, you're someone who will confront and face the problem head on because you care about the person that you have the problem with. And that's what the song is about, like having differences, but coming at them, you know, from different sides and working them out.
I think it's important to do that. And I think like nowadays, especially because it's a thing that I see less and less around me. Like people tend to like hide, you know, in like what they really want to say, and then there's like create all this like weird energy and tension that I don't want it, so
get it out of here. Absolutely. Yeah, it's far too easy to do that, especially like, I don't know, on social media and stuff. It's very easy to like to be the god in the throne, yeah. You know, and then when you're confronted in person, it's like, I'm sorry.
I know, and it seems like everybody like looks like weird and scared, and it's like, oh my god.
But, you know, speaking of, you know, big differences and within friendships or within our social circles and stuff, I also wanted to kind of touch on, like, you're someone who is from Madrid originally, or are you from Malaga originally?
I was born in Barcelona, actually.
Oh, right. That's right.
But with, like, I moved then to Sevilla and then to Madrid when I was, like, 6 or 7, something like that.
Right. Okay. And when did you?
But I've been in Madrid since. So.
And when was your first? You lived in New York before you lived in New Orleans. Is that right?
Yeah, it was like 2010. I lived there for a couple of years.
Okay. Yeah, I'm curious what your feelings are about some things being coming from Europe, going to America, because now that I'm in a position where I'm someone who's from America who's come to Europe, I'm very interested as to, are there certain things that you miss or certain things that you think are better or worse? For me, like, one of the biggest differences is probably, like, the healthcare system.
For sure.
And what's your thought on, you know, being in America from Europe and dealing with America's healthcare system?
Oof, it's like it's so different, and it's just like, especially what blows my mind is like people here accept it as if it was super normal to go to a doctor, and then you have the doctor, the nurse, and the person from the insurance telling you, okay, this is gonna cost you this much. Okay, you cannot afford this. Your insurance doesn't cover it. So,
Right.
yeah, for me it was like mind blowing. Like, oh my God, because in Spain you get sick and then you go to the doctor and then you don't pay anything.
Yeah.
You get the most complicated, weird surgery ever that they just like practice it that day for you and then you don't pay anything. So yeah, it's
I
like in
think
exchange for taxes you get that.
that's a really that's a I think that's a really interesting point that you said about, people just think that is super normal. They don't either don't know about the way that the rest of the world works, or they think it's like they kind of look down on it, like it's weaker that we have a system here like this. I told my dad that a couple of years ago I had a bicycle accident. I fell over the handlebars of my bike,
Oh yeah.
and I busted my chin open, and I had like wounds all over my body, and I had to get stitches in my chin. And it was my first time going to a German hospital, and they called the ambulance. They took me to the hospital. They stitched me up, and I was out the same day. But I only paid, I think, like 10 or 15 euros for the ambulance ride, or for the whole thing in general. And I told my dad that story, and he just rolled his eyes like, man.
So European.
That's so European. Yeah, it was almost like you don't understand how the real world works. And I was like, but no, that is also the real, I don't know. But fate,
No,
yeah.
it's mind blowing because I've seen other people, like I've had this discussion like so many times with different people, and I've even heard like, why should I pay taxes for like a person that makes less money than me? Or like, why should I, like make sure that this person that is hasn't like studied like as much as I have, make sure that they have like this the health care covered. And this is like, oh my God.
It's really defensive, right? It's very protective. Like, I'm looking out for me and for my the things I've earned and worked for, and I don't want other people to take that away from me.
It's way more individualistic, I think.
Absolutely,
I
absolutely.
think.
And in terms
And
of like another big difference for me coming here was seeing that all public transportation can work on time. As opposed to, I mean, I know New York has like, funny things with like the L train, but in New Orleans, I mean, there just isn't a
It's
bus
just
going.
like a utopia. I don't know. It's just like a I don't know, like a lie or like a some, how do you say, like how do you call it, like something that is just like you keep thinking that it's gonna come one day and it's just like never comes.
No,
I don't know, it's just like it's so different. It's here also like the culture is like you is I feel like a lot of individualism is going on here, like in terms of like you have your own car, you pay for your own things, your house that I don't wanna like talk to any of my neighbors, it's just like that type of like, of course New Orleans is different, there's like a community here and everything, but in general I feel like in Metairie, for example, like it's a neighborhood here in New Orleans, it's just like houses, 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 like individual people just like not touching other people. I think it has to do a little bit with that type of mentality.
Yeah, I think so too. And I really wonder what keeps cities from trying their best to solidify or put more money into their infrastructure. Because when you see like how many broken streets there are in New Orleans, when you see how easy it is for the whole place to flood within like a 25-minute rain shower,
Yeah, for sure.
it's unbelievable. And I was just thinking about how we talked about going to hospitals and getting sick and stuff. I don't know if you know people who enough people in New Orleans, because I know that you're surrounded mostly by musicians, but you probably have a few friends who have like regular day jobs, either at cafes, restaurants, or something like that. And in my experience, when I worked there, it was really often that Americans would save their sick days. They would either work through the illnesses to save their holidays so that they could take off sick days, like call in sick to do something else. And that's something that I've realized you don't have to do here. I don't know how it is in Spain necessarily. I know that the economy is different from Germany, of course, but in Germany, I know so many people here who have their jobs, and you know, if you're sick, you just tell your boss you're sick and you still get paid exactly. for it, and you don't have to hide or lie because you still get plenty of holiday.
Like, for sure. I feel it has to do with like the workers' rights, you know, like you cannot be sane in your mind working like 14 hours a day, not having any rest, not getting sick. It's just like doesn't make any sense, you know. No. And here I feel like it's way, like people accept it for some reason because they're gonna get paid or something like that, and I just don't understand it. And in the beginning I used to get frustrated with this and like be like, oh my god, but now I'm like, okay, you guys have to figure it out, you know. I'm not from here, like right. you guys have to like change things if you want to, the same way it has happened in other countries, you know, in Spain, like, and Germany as well, like through demonstrations, through like, you know, you go to your boss and complain about it. Mm-hmm. There is like ways of doing it. And I don't know. I think like, yeah, it has to happen here because it's insane. Like people yeah. like I've seen like workers just like literally like sick, like like waiters, you know, like, yeah. oh my God.
And they're pushing through.
Like, exactly. And it's just like, it's not good for the company. It's not good for the workers. It's just, like, it's not good for the economy in general.
It's not good for anything. And it, for me, mm-hmm. it's really sad. And you know, when I was there, I was of the mindset that, you know, if you're doing these crazy long days and you're filling every gap with some kind of work and you do it 7 days a week, every week, that there was like a pride you could take in that. And the people were, you know, convincing themselves that the more time they spent working, the better they were going to be at whatever they're doing, you know, as yeah. opposed to practicing. Of course, that's different. That's bettering a skill, but working on their job, doing it seven yeah. days a week as much as they could. I don't know. Now that I've had some separation from that idea, I mean, people here will really be surprised or look at you a bit strange if you're trying to overwork too long past yeah. the hours that they set up for you, because they want you to also have your own life.
Exactly.
You know, it's not good for their company if you're fried or depressed or lonely or, you know, underslept.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it just like makes perfect sense. But I think it's also like tricky because whenever you start getting paid by the hour and stuff like that, you get in a way greedy. You know, mm-hmm. not greedy, but you start thinking like, okay, I need money for this. I need money for that. I need money for, so it's just like, I have to push. And here also, America is very like goal oriented, you know, like, right. oh my God, you know, my goal, my dream, you know, money, my dog, my house, my, I don't know, my people, my family. It's just like, it's very much like that. That idea is very like, you know, mm-hmm. like implanted. So yeah, it's kind of like, then I just like, I just came back from Spain. So now my, you know, I'm just like, oh my God, it's just like, what am I doing here?
What's the water situation like in Spain? Because I know in New Orleans, we were often, well, first off, we never drink from the tap, which is a new lifestyle for me in Germany. Totally different.
I know.
How was it in Spain?
It's so weird because here all of a sudden you get an advice, a warning thing that is just like an amoeba is going to eat up your brain.
Yeah, like, it's fear-mongering.
Your family or something like that. And it's just like so weird because it's like you cannot drink water from noon to 7 p.m. And it's kind of like, okay, so all
great.
Right.
I guess I have to go buy all this exactly. plastic, which just, exactly. you know what I mean?
It's in waste Spain, upon waste. You can probably drink the water from the sink. It's just like,
it's the same.
It's perfect water. Yeah, it's like, okay. if you move, the better water, Madrid has very good water. But the other places, you can drink it, but maybe it tastes a little different. But it's like, you can totally drink it safely and everything.
Okay. That's something I really always appreciate. Because in New Orleans, it was like, you just don't do it.
Yeah.
You just don't do it. You're boiling it all the time. And I even remember when they were saying, like, don't even shower. There was, like, a week or something.
Exactly.
And I was like, there's a fungus that's, going to eat your skin.
Yeah, with these warnings, it's like, you cannot touch the water. And then it's just, like, 3 p.m. You just read the email. You've been taking showers, like, since 10, you know. it has happened many times to me. Like, you hear about the warning, like, way later.
And yeah.
It's like, okay. All right.
Well, and is it safe? Is it pretty safe in Spain, in Madrid specifically? Like, you know, because I'm used to Munich now is like so ridiculously close your eyes to everyone safe. as opposed to New Orleans, where in New Orleans, you've been held at gunpoint twice, right?
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about those experiences?
It was crazy because I had never, I don't think I've had ever like any experience like that with guns in general, with like weapons. And I was just like walking on Frenchman Street, which is like a pretty like crowded centric place in New Orleans. And this guy just like, we were three people, three friends. And this guy just like held me like from the back, put the gun on my like pretty close to my face. and just like asked for the money, and we gave him the money and he left. But it was just like the whole like, oh my God, you know, like things that you've seen in my case, you know, like in the movies, like, you know, Madrid in comparison is like a Disney like place, you know, like you would never, I mean, like the most that you would get is like, I mean, there was like some things for sure, but like it was like with knives or something like that. That's like the biggest thing that you can get there.
Okay.
But guns is just like, oh my God, you know? And then just like a lot of crazy thoughts just like cross your mind immediately. Like, oh my God, this guy's going to get nervous and he's going to like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But luckily nothing happened.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, I always think about that experience, and I'm always telling some people here about, because I have some friends here who travel to New Orleans or travel to America. And when they travel, they sometimes ask, like, you know, how is it? Is it safe there? Is there certain things we should avoid? And I always think back onto your experiences, because that I could have very easily have been in that group of friends and been in that situation for sure. With you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's really crazy. I want to shift the conversation a bit now into, you know, the point of this show is that you're an artsy-fartsy immigrant. You've migrated across the ocean. You know, I want to know a bit about how you're making a living. You know, I know that you're a musician, one of my favorites, in fact, and you've got a really good education, and I want to know about your musical background, because you for a short time you went to Juilliard, is that right?
Yeah, I went there for a year, like 2 years almost. And for me, basically, I'm going to tell you a little bit of Madrid. So basically, Madrid, the education in music was, now I think about it, and I would call it like insane, because it was very academic. So you would learn harmony, or like I went to the conservatory, so you would learn harmony or like music theory, all that stuff, very academically. So I wouldn't see a piano. Like, I would study harmony without seeing how it sounds, or like without a piano in front of me, just like understanding how it works.
Yeah.
So it's very like, Bach used to do this. These are the rules for this, for voice leading. And it was, you know, great. You know, you would pass the test, but then it's just like, what the heck am I doing with this in my life, you know? And I was very into like classical back in Madrid. I was just like doing the, you know,
yeah, well, that's your training, right? It's mainly classical.
So I tried to, like, I basically started thinking about leaving whenever, in 2008, there was, like, this big economical crisis happening.
Mm-hmm.
So Spain was super affected by it. And there was, like, literally, like, for arts and, like, for stuff, I mean, for nobody. Like, there was, like, very little jobs and, you know, it was awful. So I started to think about leaving there, because it was just, like, nothing to do, nothing motivating. So a lot of negativity around and everything. So I tried to apply first for Europe, for London. And they invited me in London to assist to like a master class, you know, like in hopes that, so thinking that I would join their, you know, their school, like afterwards and stuff. So basically, like, I bought my ticket and everything. I was ready to go. And this huge, I don't know if you remember, but there was, like, around that time, there was a volcano happening in Iceland that affected, like, the whole, like, space for in Europe. So basically, like, all the flights were canceled. Like, it was just, like, it happened for a month. So
that's crazy.
I know, and it was just like my flight. I went with my flight with everything like booked already, and I got to the airport, and all the flights had been canceled. Canceled, and
Jesus.
they didn't even know when they were gonna open, like, the space again, like to fly and everything. So I went home, like, okay, I wrote, like, hey. So they told me, like, no matter, that doesn't matter, like, just like schedule it for next month. So what happened was, like, I did it again. I booked my flight, I booked everything. I went to the airport again a month after, and it happened again. Like, my
Oh my
flight was
God.
canceled. I know. So it was just like, it was the same reason, because like some countries had to wait a little longer for the air to clear out from, like, from the ashes and stuff. And yeah, they canceled it again. So I talked to them, and they told me, like, okay, let's see for next year, because it was like June, so the whole course was like was ending, the whole semester. So they can't, like, they canceled it on me, and I was just like so bummed. And then my cousin Pats was like living in New York, and I was just like super bummed after this and stuff. And she invited me to go to New York for the summer.
That's how you ended up in New York. Oh,
Yeah,
I didn't know that part of the story before. Oh, that's
yeah,
crazy.
she was there studying film,
Right.
and she told me, like, why don't you come here and just like take some space, like distance from Madrid and like everything there. So I just like went, and I started meeting people, and meeting people, and meeting people. And through meeting people, I got this chance to like start in a school there. So I what happened was, like, I basically like auditioned and got in a kind of like an art how do you say, like, art invitation. They would invite me for a year to check it out and like to study there and stuff. So I just went there, and through that school, I met somebody to get into Juilliard.
Crazy. Oh, wow.
So yeah, it was just like, I don't know, a bunch of like,
Total like
things
chance and
happened.
luck and
Exactly.
connection, man.
Yeah. And it was
That's
just like, now I think about it, and I was just there, I was just like, okay, all right,
Yeah, it must almost feel like a blur now, how quickly it all just kind of
Yeah,
happened.
totally. And it's just like, it was very like, I didn't even think about it. I was just like, okay, I'll do it. Okay, whatever. Okay, this is cool. All right. Like, I wasn't even like, it wasn't like, oh my God, I love this school. Like, I had been trying for years, and like, no, it was just like very organic, very like,
That's good.
natural.
And we met in New Orleans at the University of New Orleans. I was studying film and you studied music there. But
Yeah.
how long would you say either after moving to New Orleans for studying there or how long after graduation would you say that you were able to start making a living from music, and how did you manage to do that?
Yeah, I feel like I've always tried to make it happen even while I was studying. It wasn't like I studied. I mean, when I was in Madrid, maybe I did that, but I immediately like tried to like get involved in into, projects and stuff. So in New Orleans, when I was studying, like, all these schools actually, they have a very good program in like getting jobs through the college, through the school. So I was
Right.
teaching, it was like a few gigs that, it's like a part-time job to complement your studies or whatever. So yeah.
But
Yeah.
now you're teaching piano and
Yeah.
you're gigging a lot with the you have
Yeah.
two bands, three bands you're playing with, or you're a studio musician sometimes as well, right? So
Yeah, this is like, I feel like in this realm in music, you kind of have, especially like, I feel like even more now, that you kind of have to be able to do a bunch of everything, a little bit,
Yeah.
no, sorry, a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to, unless you get a project that is super successful, and then you go with it and it's taking up all your time,
Right.
you kind of have to be able to do a few things. But I like it. I think, like, I'm a person that gets not bored, but like, I need to change stuff. I
Yeah,
cannot do like
yeah.
all the time the same thing, like, the same type of thing. So yeah,
I think
like,
that's a
it's fun
pretty
for me.
fair assessment of your personality. Like, I
Yeah.
don't know, since I've known you, I wouldn't say that you get bored quickly, but I think you're someone who appreciates and respects a consistent current, a nice flow of change that you can mend with and float with and try to adapt to. Because I think you're someone who I really am inspired by a lot, because I think you're someone who really loves to teach yourself new things and learn new things and try and get good at things that I wouldn't have thought about or I would have thought were too hard to start looking at. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like it's important to have that. Like I grew up with my dad is a person that taught himself to do a bunch of things. And I just like think like seeing that you imitate it in the beginning, like without noticing. And then when you grow older, especially like, you know, in this age, like I feel like you just start realizing like, okay, I've seen this before. You know, I've seen my dad like teaching himself how to play piano from scratch. You know, I've seen him like teaching him to play guitar. And then my dad is very much like, he buys a clarinet. And it's like, look, I can play a song in clarinet. And I'm like, what? You know?
Wow, that is a lot like you. That's really crazy.
Like, you know, of course, like, it's just like beginner, amateur. But he's like, has that spirit, you know? He loves to like learn new things. And I love that as well. Just like, you know.
Let's talk about New Orleans specifically a little bit. Because, you know, that's something that's where we came together. That's where you and I played in two bands together. We played in a band called Big Lenoir. I had my other band there, Jordan Prince Band. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things to love about it, but I think there might also be a nice handful of things that could be different other than like the bureaucratic or the social or infrastructure things. For me, I mean, I love studying there. I think going to college there is probably one of the greatest experiences I've ever had. I've made a lot of good friends, learned a lot. You can play a lot of concerts. You can meet a lot of musicians. You know, you're always challenged but welcomed, which is a really great combination.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, there's music everywhere. The food is so delicious. The vibe can be so great. It's so many creative people. These are things that I really loved about living there. But what would you say, I mean, because it's been off and on about 6 years for you now. Is that right?
Yeah.
So would you say that things
I always leave, which is like great, but
you always find a chance to go back to Spain and get a breath, which is good. Yeah. See some perspective. But would you say, because I haven't been there consistently in 4 years, so I would say, are there things now about it that you used to like but don't anymore, or things that you didn't like but you do now? Are there like some big changes for you from the city?
I feel like New Orleans for me was like the first time, my first experience living in a smaller city. So for me, I was really impressed and loved. I really fell in love with like the community and like the fact that you can see so many of your friends just like playing around, just like walking around, and everybody has like seems to have like this like chill, like happy party vibe going on, like open-minded. And that's something that I really like as you said before, like I really fell in love with that art community here for sure. The problem with New Orleans I would say that I face now is like whenever you've been here for a while and you've met like the people and you've played the venues, it's not that hard to play like the venues, you know, the bigger venues, so it gets to a point that it feels like you're a little stuck, you know? It feels like you like need to leave and come back in order to appreciate it, you know? And that's
a great point. Like leaving it to appreciate certain parts of it. Yeah. I always I don't know if you, I think we used to talk about this thing. Maybe we've changed the lingo a little bit over the time, but it was called the circle, or like the, you know, the vicious cycle or the bubble or something. Like, I always found that for me, it was very easy to feel that I was progressing more musically, like growing our attention or fan base or even the talent or something in a certain way. But the moment that I took a step back or traveled out and looked back at it, I would realize that it had grown a little bit, but it was a bit of a treadmill. Do you still feel that way sometimes?
I feel like for me, it's not that much like, I feel like here is a great city to learn. It's a great city to learn. It's a great city to rehearse your artistic persona, to try out new things. It's very open. Like the audience is very open-minded, in my opinion. Like In New Orleans, you can go and see like so many different music in just one night. But the only thing with me is like, and I feel like it can happen anywhere, that it's always great to leave and then expose your artistic persona somewhere else and get feedback, you know?
I think that's exactly right.
And it's just like, it's so, because sometimes, you know, I was, I remember one day I was talking to this guy from Arcade Fire.
Yeah, Butler?
Win Butler, and he was telling me that they're from Houston, you know, so they told me like they had to move, like not the only reason, but one of the reasons like of their success was like they moved to Montreal.
I always thought they were Canadian. That's crazy.
Exactly. So they were, and they just like, you know, like sometimes like the cities don't, like some of their artists, it's just hard to make it in the city that you're from, you know?
Right.
And then you just have to go somewhere else and, you know, just like see and then try things out and like play and like meet new musicians from there. And I feel it's always like a fresh air. And then you come back here to New Orleans and then you bring all that, you know?
Yeah.
You fuck with that. So I think, you know, it's important to leave. And I feel like it happens maybe in a big city. It's or in a bigger city, it's just like you don't feel it as much,
right?
Because it's just bigger and it has more offer and stuff. But eventually, like that happens as well, you know.
I think Moritz, our producer here, just googled the population of New Orleans right now. It's actually a little bit less than I thought. It's like 423,600 or so, and I think with a population that size in a creative world, it's probably, I think it's, I always viewed New Orleans as like a workshop for music.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just like you were saying, you go there, you're challenged by your craft, you're inspired by your peers, take it somewhere else, like hit the refresh button, you know, kind of look at it from a distance, see what you might've been missing or what you can share with others, and then take those new things back to the city, workshop it, take it back out. That's something that I really I see more and more now. The more distance I have from it, of course, there's so many things I miss about it. I miss having that workshop feeling as much as I had there. But definitely, you see, whenever you visit, certain people give you that vibe of, okay, the bubble is still real, but it's very comfortable. Would you say that there's a risk of occasional laziness sometimes, like from New Orleans? It's very easy. I mean, they call it the Big Easy. It's just very easy and relaxed, you know, like I don't want to sound derogatory.
Like, no, for sure. And I feel it's like also depends on like what you're looking for yourself, you know, in your life. Like there, I know many people in Spain that they would die to like live in a smaller city, like from Madrid, you know, like live in a smaller city where they could play every night, you know. And I feel like musically here, you don't get bored. You know, because there's so many musicians, so many different projects, so much different music, you know.
Yeah, that's so true.
That maybe, like, I go to Madrid and then I go out to see, like, the local scene, you know. And it's not as, like, huge as here, you know. It's not. It's just not.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like, it depends on, like, how you want to, you know, portray yourself, and, like, how you want to live your life. Like, I feel like here it has, like, You can live a very comfortable, good life here. But for me, like, and I'm sure, like, I've talked to many people like that, and for you too, like, if you have a little bit of the itch of, like, going out and meeting new people and playing for this and that, you have to leave here, you know? You have to leave and then put everything that you learn here somewhere else.
Right.
And then get feedback from those people, because here is also, like, New Orleans is hard for audiences because there's so many shows for free that, you know, people like, not a lot of people come out to a lot of shows, you know? So especially the local ones, there's so much offer. And if you have this show, but this artist that you love, most likely he or she or they are going to play next week for free somewhere else.
That's the issue. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you don't pay for it. And it's just like, it's part of like the way things work here. So I feel like, yeah, it's super important to just like, as an artist, you know, like leave and then show what you're doing to some completely different audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's, yeah, it's very like,
it's kind of an always, it's like a grass is always greener situation.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
for
sure. So many Germans here talk about like, oh shit, New Orleans? You left New Orleans for Munich, you know?
Exactly.
But then in my head, it's like, dude, I can play bigger stages here and instead of New Orleans, but New Orleans was where I was. You know, it's
exactly.
It's always a grass is always greener thing.
Yeah, for sure. Always. And I feel like, you know, it's just like for me, it's hard to say that right now because I just came back from holidays and I'm kind of like in a post-vacational like depression. But I feel like you ultimately have to keep, you know, like the way I envision myself as an artist is like being able to travel around and do this thing here, that thing here, you know, and, you know, move like that. Not stay, like, I know that if I stay for too long in a place, I just get like claustrophobic and like, you know.
Like I said, you know, you love to stay kind of in an ever-changing flow. I think that's healthy though. I really do think that's healthy. I want to ask a bit about, so we had a band called Big Lemois together, and you guys still have the band and you just released some new music. Tell me a bit about what that band's doing now and like, you know, your release concert. You guys just went on a tour.
So. Yeah, it was just like a very first time thing for everything, for pretty much everything that we've done this year. So we put our second EP, the first was with you. Mm-hmm. And we hadn't recorded anything in 4 years because I had to leave because some work happened. And then I was like renewing my visa. So I had to stay in Spain for longer than I thought.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. In a second. Just in a second. But it was basically like we took 4 years of like, and then you left. So we didn't have a guitar player. We were looking for a second guitar player.
Right.
And then we found one and then we've put it together. Mm-hmm. We came up with a second EP on June 28th. We put it out and we put it out through the Orchard. So through Bubble Bath Records, this record label from here that I'm part of.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're just like I just came back. So I'm just like trying to
frazzled.
Adjust what next year is gonna be. We have a few cool shows.
Oh yeah,
yeah. The highlight of it is like we're opening. Okay, I'm gonna say, but then I'm gonna explain it.
I mean, if you
we're opening for Incubus.
What?
But, no, wait.
But, that's great.
We're not the openers. We're the openers of the show.
So how's it working? Is it like a festival or is it like an Incubus concert and you're one of two openers or what's the setup?
Yeah, exactly. So we would say we're the first openers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where is it?
It's on the Fillmore, this new place that opened like...
Oh, it's in New Orleans.
Yeah, in New
Orleans.
Okay,
when's the date?
So we have it's like November 20th. 26th.
Ladies and gentlemen, November 26th. Get your tickets now for Incubus featuring openers Big Lemois.
And also, like, I was a huge fan of, like,
Random Boy. I'm sorry, that was, like, the stupidest thing.
Can you start your shows like this from now on? I'm a big fan.
It's perfect that I have a bit of a cold, and it's like my voice is deeper and like itchier.
Ladies and gentlemen,
from the creators, you're totally the perfect voice for that. Can you do it?
If I can stop laughing.
This summer, from the creators of Seinfeld, Violeta de Rigo del Castillo stars in Big Lemois.
The first openers.
First blood.
Oh my God.
In theaters, November 26th. Oh shit! That's so cool, dude. And you've always had a big thing for was it Brandon Flowers?
Yeah,
Flowers.
Follow him on Instagram.
Yeah,
that's huge for me that I never followed
you. Yeah, you've had a big thing for that guy. That's awesome.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, that's funny. We just drove back. We had we just had a concert about 6 hours north of Munich, and we were driving back, and we went into this late 90s, early 2000s playlist, and everyone was just recommending like Incubus, Crowded House, Sixpence None the Richer, you know, like Green Day. And we just went, you know, it's funny, like you get into that vibe and you're adding on like, oh, Third Eye Blind.
Yeah.
And you just keep going and going and going. That's so much fun. And we played Drive, I think, by Incubus. And just like all these memories came back. Mm-hmm. But you said Big Lamar released on this New Orleans record label that you're a part of. So tell me a bit about Bubble Bath Records.
Yeah. So basically,
Bubble Bath Records.
So basically, like, it's like, it's related to what we were talking before. You know, like, there's so much music happening in this town that not only like the, like from the outside, it's always like blues and jazz from New Orleans. Whoa. You know, like, okay. All right.
Thanks.
Yeah. And it's true, you know, like, you know, jazz music happens here and everything, you know, and the blues is like, for sure, like very, very important. Like,
yeah, roots of course. Music.
But there's so much music happening, like from people like coming from that background, like jazz and blues, and also like from people from the funk, from people from classical, from people from like coming from more like folk, you know, stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like New Orleans has become like this like city where all these genres are like intertwined, like mixing. And what happens here is very cool, that it's like people with different backgrounds like come together into a band and create a project. So the project, you can hear so many of those influences, you know, like mm-hmm. from this person that comes from this. And I don't know, I thought, we thought like Bubble Bath happens because of that, you know, because we thought that it was like a cool thing that it was happening. Like so many people were having their, you know, projects as musicians, like accompanying this artist or that artist. And they were having their, you know, own project, personal stuff that they wrote. And Bubble Bath is kind of like an outlet for those people, you know, like, mm-hmm. okay, you have your project, you're playing with like this artist, this Michael Bublé, or Greg Agit, there is this clarinet player playing for Michael Bublé, but also he recorded his own thing, you know, and he wants to put it out and he wants to show the world that, hey, I have my music as well. So yeah,
that's his like opportunity to have like total creative control and make a good plan with you guys about how to strategize a release. That's great. How long have you guys had it now? When did it start exactly?
We started like, I've been saying for 3-4 years that we've been 2 years ago.
So it's been 23 years ago.
So yeah, I think around, I think when it started, it was right before I left. I left for a year and a half in 2016, 17. So around that time
it
started. And we started from scratch. We didn't know what the hell, you know.
Yeah, it's a super complicated thing to set up,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. It's just like a weird world. And we're all artists coming from that world. So we weren't accustomed to all the bureaucracy and all the things,
mm-hmm.
like all the ways things are done, you know. But I feel like it's just like steadily we've been like growing, you know, and we have like a bunch of like new music and new artists out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a good thing.
How many artists do you guys have registered right now?
We have 22 artists.
Holy shit. And, wow.
Yeah. We just had this sax player, Jaron, just joined. Amari Ansari.
Ooh. And he's doing a new album, right?
Yeah. He's doing a new album. And then we had this like super sick like punk rock band called Bad Moon Lander.
That's a cool name.
And then I know, right? And and then we have that's it, I think. I think we have like in the future like this like Slugger it's like a funk band.
Slugger. So, ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah,
it's great.
Like, I think it's like a cool, like you can go on Spotify or whatever, online, we're everywhere.
Yeah, we're gonna post the links with this for the new Big Lamar music and for Bubble Bath.
Nice. Thank you.
Of course. and you know, just because I really, this is also part of why I really wanted to get into this podcast, you know, we've talked about what kind of music you're doing and how you're creating an outlet for other artists in New Orleans to release their own music the way they want to do it. And that's the artsy part. But, you know, a big part of this is that you're an immigrant, and so am I. And I really want to talk about, you know, your process. I know a little bit about it because, you know, we've been friends for a long time, and I've been in and out of, you know, hearing the steps as they came along. Mm-hmm. I know that we've had to write some letters for you to prove that you're, you know, working and
yeah.
you know, you were necessary to make certain projects happen, which in my case is totally true. Mm-hmm. But I want to ask a bit about, like, you know, where's your immigration process now as a European going to America, and how long did it take? How, you know, I know that it cost a lot of money. You had to get lawyers involved.
Yeah.
So what was that like? Mm-hmm. You know, how did that start?
So basically, like, it started, like, because when I came to the States, I came as a student. And then as a student, you can get a thing that is called OPT, which is 1 year of working permit, because you studied here, right? Mm-hmm. They gave that to you. But I basically, like, spend all the chances that I had. I studied all the things that I could study. Mm-hmm. I spent, like, all the OPTs that I could get. So the only thing was, like, either getting married or having the artist visa. Like, those were the options. And when I started with the process, everybody was just like, oh, my God, it's so difficult. So I was just like, okay, I'm going to give it a try. And then I contacted with these lawyers from New York. And I've been doing it with them, but it's just like a process of, like, it cost me like $3,500, the lawyers. Plus an insane amount of papers, like, demonstrating what I'm going to do because it's like a 3-year visa. So you have to prove basically that you are here to work.
Okay.
And since you don't have a contract, because it's not like a 9-to-5 job, you kind of like, it allows you to be a freelance, right?
Okay.
It allows you to have that. So, yeah, it's like, it's very like strict I literally have to fill up a calendar explaining what I'm going to do the next 3 years. Who's going to hire me? I need the signatures from those people, like the addresses, the phone numbers. A brief, like, document, like, explaining, like, what I'm going to do with my life.
Jesus.
Then also, like, the first time that I did it, now I'm in the process of renewing it, but the first time that I did it, I needed, I think it was, like, a total of, like, I think it was, like, 20, between 20 and 22 letters of recommendation, basically of people well-established in the music industry, or with, like, things to prove, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That you know, validates your case and says, like, and it's the worst part of this process is the way those letters have to be written. So it's not like, okay, Jordan, just like, you write a letter about me, you mm-hmm. know? No, it's just like, it has to be written like as if it was like Mozart, you know, the next Mozart or something. And it's just, like, insane because here in New Orleans, especially, like, there is so many musicians, you know, that can play the gig and do it. So you somehow have to prove that
only you're the most important one.
That. Exactly. Oh, like, only you can do that. So I remember, like I eventually, like, I had my lawyer, like, basically, like, the person would write a letter of recommendation about me. And then I, like, my lawyer would edit it. So at some point, it was so many edits that my lawyer start to, like, writing them, you know? And they were like, okay, with the approval of the person, you know, they would change a few things, but it has to have phrases like, Violeta's outrageous talent. huge words that I was just, like, talking to the people, like, I'm so sorry. Like, this is not me at all. Like,
please build me up as much as
exactly.
possible.
And I'm just, like, a person that I wouldn't, you know, like, I don't talk like that, or I don't, like, I don't know. It's just, like, so weird for me. So, yeah. So imagine, like having people, like, you know, not very, like you don't know that well and you respect artistically, mm-hmm. having, like, you know, write these things about you, like, tremendous, next level. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, dude.
completely couldn't imagine this project without any a single other human being.
It's like, thank God that she's born. It's just like that type of thing. Like,
oh God. Yeah. How many letters like that did you have to get in total? Do you know?
Now, this time I have to get 4.
4. Okay.
So, yeah. I'm just like thinking about candidates. Like, oh my God.
What would you say was like the most... I mean, that's probably kind of embarrassing stage, but what was, would you say, the most difficult part? Like, was there ever a moment where you felt disrespected or something, or kind of put down by the process?
It's just like not disrespected as much as like, why the hell am I doing this? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
is it
why
worth
the
it?
Hell am I feeling this? Like, this is so complicated. Why? I don't understand it. You know, I don't understand why so difficult, you know, because it's not like, you know, like the U.S. is just like, it's like a bunch of immigrants, you know, like there is so many people that are from different places of the world, you know, and there's so many people that, you know, come from, you know, different parts of the world that I just like found so weird to make it so hard. You know,
yeah,
for like people from other places, especially because nowhere else makes it so hard for Americans. I mean, you know, you've been in Germany for years, just like hasn't been that this process, you know.
No.
And for in Spain, for Americans, it's not that hard, you know. So it's just like insane that it's so
for a country that's like the whole reputation is built off being a melting pot of cultures.
Exactly.
It's like, strange that they'd make it so difficult for a completely harmless piano player.
Exactly. It's kind of like
fucking play piano somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's really crazy.
Yeah,
to me.
Totally. It's just like, I don't know. I understand, you know, like if you want to make a visa, okay, make it. But it's just like, it's hard. Yeah. To get for sure. I thought it was just like applying for like a job with the government or something like that. You know? After this.
Oh man, but you didn't have any sort of like extended time before the deadline of this renewal where you had to maybe apply for like a different temporary kind, because just to make it clear, like when I came here, the first one I had was of course the tourist visa, which everybody has, and then I extended that before getting a work visa by doing a language learning visa. Which I don't know. I don't know if that's restricted purely to Germany or not. I think we'd have to look that up.
You can do that, but I think you have here in the States. You have to be a full time student in order to get a visa with that.
Okay.
Meaning, like, I think it's like 20 something hours a week, or like 30 hours. I don't know. It's like there's a number of hours that you have to be, because if you do like less than that, you get a tourist visa.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it's basically like, I feel like in the end, it's just like a way of like getting money, you know, from you. So it's just like, that happens everywhere, you know, it's like.
They force you to spend all this money to college, and then the college system is so corrupt. And
exactly.
I don't know. Exactly. I feel like every major system in the States is secretly terribly corrupt.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
But I mean, in Germany too, sometimes.
Spain is like, I know.
That's so crazy. That's so crazy.
Yeah. It's kind of like it makes it, in a way, I mean, you have to like kind of like work through it, but it makes you feel like less than, you know.
Right.
Like I had never experienced like what is being an, you know, person in another country.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have less rights because you're not an American, you know.
Yes.
So
That actually brings me into.
And I can't even imagine, like, I had friends when I was in New York, like, from India and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The countries that are, like, in, like, developing stages, you know, it's just, like, ridiculous, you know?
Right. And actually, that brings me to a point that I really just thought about, but, you know, as a white guy going from America to Germany, where it's mostly white dudes. I didn't see, you know, of course, I'm not going to be oppressed or anything racially, but I am curious as a, you know, as a woman with an accent going to America, were you ever in a position where you felt someone was being racist with you, or like questioned your validity as a resident there?
No.
That's good.
It's just like, I mean, I felt it as a woman.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think that's, yeah.
But not necessarily because I was like...
Not because of where you're from.
Yeah.
Okay. More because it doesn't make it better, but...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for sure. But that happens like everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you just have to like speak up about it and just like, you know? But yeah, it's just like, it happens for sure. And it's just like, it's, I always say this thing, like, if this happened in Spain, you would be dead, you know? Because, like, you can, like, I can express myself, like, I deliver myself way better in Spanish, you know? So I had a few moments like that in English where I was just, like, frustrated that I couldn't, like, you know, just, like, handle the situation better because of the language barrier and stuff.
Right. I'm really thankful that you felt, like, confident enough to speak on the podcast in English for so long. I mean, yeah, I always thought your English was better than you thought it was anyway.
No, it's just like, I always feel it, like, especially when I come back from
6 weeks of speaking Spanish.
Exactly.
Ah, yeah,
of,
true.
Of, like,
true.
No English whatsoever.
True.
Like, nothing at all.
And Vivi, just before I forget here, you know, we've talked about how you've made a living in New Orleans and how we've met and how we've played together and stuff. But I think I never really get a solid idea of your creative process, you know, how you come to an idea on your own. I want to know what that's like.
So yeah, basically, like, I feel New Orleans is a very good place for that. And, actually when I met you, it was that, you know, that I think a part of the thing that brought us together was that the fact that we were able to like share our creative ideas, like, with no, like, with total, like, openness and everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like New Orleans is very much like that. And for me, it's like, I think for my creative process happens very much when I'm by myself.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it happens, like, I need to work first by myself and then be able to, like, meet up with people and, like, even, like, you know, maybe, like, thought about the same idea with a different perspective that I hadn't like seen before. But it's true that I like that solitude and that like I need to think about this like just first by myself, even though like maybe like afterwards I'm gonna like change completely the idea when I meet up with somebody and show the idea. But yeah, that's like a huge thing for me.
So if I was just to imagine you working on a melody that you wanted to do for one of your songs, you would just be in a closed room, like blinds closed, zoning in on the piano, repeating the melody over and over, changing minute details until it feels right? Or are you someone who plays it once, puts hands on the hips and goes like,
I'm like, yeah, I have that problem that it's like I question myself to the
max. That's true. Yeah, that's true.
So
yeah.
It's just like in the end, like I have a, like, but it happens to me a lot that I have like this like, phone
the voice recorder.
Yeah,
dude, that'll save a musician's life. I do that all the time.
Yeah, and then one day like I just go through my phone and I'm like, okay, and then I see things like from like months before and I'm like, oh my god, I never did anything with this. So I start working on the idea and then I just like work until like I'm, you know, I cannot work anymore and I hate the idea. And then I wait a little bit more and then, you know, I go back to it like maybe like a few weeks later. And that's how, you know.
Would you say sometimes do you have like a really quick process where you feel really good about it very fast? Or is it always a slow process that comes in waves?
I mean, sometimes I have like the, you know, I'm just like waiting for that thing to connect things and it happens just like without thinking. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, it's true though that whenever you have your mind, you know, cluttered with all the problems, stress, whatever, this, I have to do that. It's like, it's not going to work for me. You know, it just happens like, as I feel like everything else in my life that is just like very organic.
Mm-hmm.
Like my mom would say that I'm a disaster and I don't plan anything. And I'm just like, you know, but I think that that's part of like how I operate. You know, it's just like, it happens.
It's a controlled chaos.
Yeah, and I'm just, like, there to, like, you know, transmit it.
I am, like, the vessel, and God is talking to me.
Mother Nature talks.
My fingers give the message from God to the piano. I'm but a vessel.
Maybe you should come up with like an answer more like that, more like profound, you know, but no.
I'm just a channel for the heavens to write their scripture through me.
Yeah.
Namaste.
Also, like, for me, like, I really like to work with, the same way we used to work together, you know, like.
I miss that,
like,
yeah.
Like, show me something, and it's just like, I like this, but I, like, I don't know about that. And, like, mm-hmm. and then it's, you know, that type of, like, working over one idea that can morph into something else.
Oh, man, that was always one of my favorite things about Big Lemois, because we all came at it from totally different perspectives, but we loved each other's ideas just enough to sacrifice our own ideas of how it would go.
Yeah.
You know, like songs like Doppler or War Drugs. Or what was the one that I sang where we did that crazy rhythmic, polyrhythmic thing at the end? I think it's the
Hurt.
Yeah, dude, Hurt. Yeah. Like, I still have such a vivid memory of finding that ending in your apartment or George's apartment?
Yeah, my apartment.
And, you know, with Biggie that, there. Like, and oh, man.
That happened, like, right there, you know? I just, one start playing one thing, the other one start playing, you know, another thing.
It happened so fast.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like that's definitely, like, I don't really have one way of, like, you know, I always have to have my coffee, my cat, and my piano, you know?
And my cigarettes, and, yeah.
Exactly. This is always, like, so many ways that it happens, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's always, it's never really just one way.
No, and I don't have, like, one specific, like, thing that always helps me or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess in your case, it's just, like, let's have an open mind, try to keep myself from overthinking about my own playing.
Yeah, and when I overthink, I just go into, like, this, like, dark mode, like, of, like, I hate this song, what am I doing? I hate the piano.
This sucks! It's over!
Yeah, like, my mom was right. Totally. But do you remember that song that we worked on, in, like, recording your last album, the 12 songs, for the song for Bruno?
Oh, Count On Me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it was like, what should we do? And it was just like, we sat down for a second and it was just like,
oh yeah, they took that break, and then I was just playing. Yeah. I was just like fucking around on the drums, and you came up with that ding 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 ding, and it totally took the whole vibe of the song in a different direction.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's literally how things happen like that for me. You know, like, okay,
like,
I'm not really, like, sure how much control I have over the situation. You know, so yeah.
I love that,
though.
It's
like, free spirit, man. Free spirit.
Yeah, free spirit, bro. Let go forever. It just takes finding... Yeah, New Orleans is full of, like, the right kind of people where you can just let go of inhibition and play what feels really good, even if it might sound kind of bad at first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone should just try and find that kind of person wherever they're living. So they can just jam. Because I think a lot of great stuff just comes out of, like, playing shit for, like, 2 minutes and then something cool comes out of it.
Yeah, and it happens to me also, like, it's kind of crazy, but I kind of have to have a deeper connection with the person that I'm playing with.
Totally.
You know, something like, and it's kind of like, it's kind of bad, you know, because sometimes if you're in a gig, let's say, like, and you have to play with whoever, you kind of have to be professional to play with whoever, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's something that I'm definitely working on, like, just be able to just, like, open up right now to whoever is there, you know?
I'm totally more... like the first version that you mentioned, like I'm not someone who can jump into like a drunken jam.
Yeah, you
know? Like,
exactly.
A couple of acoustic guitars with someone that I like, you know, like someone's like, oh, my friend Steve plays blues, you want a riff on it?
Yeah.
I would much rather die than
yeah,
ever
tell
do
your
that.
Friend Steve to go.
Yeah, it's like, cool. I bet Steve's great. I want, you know, can you put poison in this? It's just, it's not anything against other people who are good or bad at whatever they do. It's just, like you said, it's just finding that connection with someone you're friends with. You know, you trust yourself, like, around them.
Yeah, for sure. No, and it's also like, but I also see, like, the point of, like, the other type. And it's something that I want to, like, that's something like a personal goal that I have, to be able to open up like that to every like whoever is there, you know, mm-hmm. because I feel like it's also like a way of like I would say, like you would tell me no, but I would think of myself like I'm not a, like I'm an extroverted person for sure. But like whenever I meet somebody, I'm always like, you know, not super open. Like I'm kind of like quiet, kind of like, you know, until I know the person.
Sure,
and
then
I
yeah.
open up and I'm like, whoa.
Unless they say something you disagree with politically, then you're like, excuse me. Sit
okay,
down.
Yeah, I can do that. But yeah, instead I'm like, oh my God, you know?
Sure.
I don't know this person. But I feel like music can totally be a thing like, you know, mm-hmm. makes you like have a great time with somebody one night. And just like, you don't necessarily have to be like friends forever or anything, right. you know, but you just share something like beyond language, beyond like, you know.
Yeah. Like, it's just yeah. connecting to some sort of strange, omniscient,
exactly.
flowing thing. And you're kind of like, oh, you get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you kind of have to be open about it and like be there and be present. And it's something that, you know, I super admire the people that I see around me that do that all the time. I'm like, oh, wow. You know?
Yeah, dude. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Music.
Well, Vivi, I want to say thank you again for taking time out of your day. I know you just got back from vacation, and I know it's early over there in New Orleans.
Yeah,
but
thank you.
You're one of my best friends, and I really appreciate your story and appreciate your music. And I really want you to flourish and blossom and do successful, great things. I can't wait to see you again. It's been way too long. It's been way too long. But we'll talk more about that off mic. I just want to say you have a record label. You have a great band. You guys are going to support Incubus. You should drop some websites out there. And thanks for being an artsy-fartsy immigrant.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I think it's so cool that you're doing this, actually.
I'm learning a lot from people. It's really fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's always great community, mm-hmm. like wherever you go.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, you want me to say the websites and everything?
Yeah.
Okay, so it would be Bubble Bath Records is like bubblebathrecords.com.
Mm-hmm. What?
What? Crazy. Yeah, and Big Lemois, you can find us like on Facebook. Instagram is Big Lemois Band.
Yeah, that's BigLemois.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
just like, yeah, Big Lemois. Like,
of course, like, classic cheeseburger band.
It's like everyday word that you use all the time. You know? No, dude, it just like came from vacation and I need to get accustomed to it again. But it's BigLemois.
Big Lemois Band.
And it doesn't mean anything, guys.
No, it has a great story, but you have to go to the website to figure that one out. I'll end this with a short anecdote. In March, me and the boys played a show in Brighton, and I saw a big yellow van that had a branding on the side called Big Lemon. And I sent it to you guys saying, hey, if you just slightly changed your name, you could have a gig van.
We think about it all the time.
The Big Lemon.
The thing that you play a gig and people come to you like, hey, what's the name of the band? And you just like get mentally ready because they're not going to get it. So it's like, it's Big Lemois. And it's like,
huh?
They look at you like, why did you choose that name?
Big fat guy. Got it.
Exactly. It's always like BigLemois.
I'm bored.
Mwah, like a kid, like mwah. And it's just like
Big Lemois.
Again. Dude, I have another anecdote with this, with the name. That mm-hmm. one time a person came. No, we were in the radio doing this interview, and we said the name, and of course the typical question, like, where does the name come from? And I said, like, it actually comes from this book, The Froth of the Daydream. And she was like, oh, yeah, the Big Lemois. Yeah, totally. And I was just, like, completely, like, confused. Like, oh, my God. Like, you're the first person ever to get this reference, you know? And
She wasn't bullshitting. She actually got it.
No, she knew about it.
Oh,
she,
wow.
She dance, you know, like, this writer. And I was, like, just, like, almost crying.
She's like, oh, you mean, like, modern surrealism? Dude, all right. That's the one out of like, after this Incubus show, when you guys are doing interviews every day, that's still going to be the probably one of the only people that gets that specific
reference.
Just
like, Dude, I was like about to cry. I was like touched by it.
You guys should do an online like voting thing before your next release where it's like, can you guess what this band name means? Or send us what you think it means, your favorite idea of what it means.
You meant like, do you think we should change our name?
Oh. Big Lemon.
Big Lemon is not that bad, dude.
It's not that bad, I gotta say. Okay, Vivi, thank you so much. Thank you to Moritz for producing the show today and Googling some quick facts for us. Always
thank
a pleasure.
You.
And we'll post these links that Vivi mentioned in the description below, along with the release date. And thank you so much, Vivi. I hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you, Mo.
Big love. Mwah. Ciao, ciao.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Hey, man. Good morning. I just had an idea about the podcast. Maybe since you're going to work on it today, I wonder if you'd be interested in, at the very end, if you added a little vocal clip where you said in English, hey, thanks for listening. If you liked today's show, please share, rate, and subscribe on iTunes because it helps new listeners find us. And then you can ask, do you have an artsy-fartsy immigrant that you'd like us to interview? You can send your suggestions to, and then you could put your email or you could put my email. What do you think?
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Ein Podcast von Jordan Prince, produziert von Moritz Bartscheider für M94.5.